15 Amud Bet.
All right, so we'll take a break. Let's begin. We're going to start Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Yud Zayin Amud Beis, the Mishnah. All right, says the Mishnah. Veshamay Omrim Im Shorin Dio V'Samonim V'Kashin. Ah, thank you. The shir this morning is sponsored by the Martyrs in commemoration of the yard site of Rebbetzin Rose Steinberger, Shoshana Reisel, Bas Menachem Mendel Yitzchok, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Hashem will have an aliyah. All right, so says the Mishnah. Veshamay Omrim Ein Shorin Dio V'Samonim V'Karshinon. So Beishama says the following, that one may not go ahead and soak dio is ink, samonim are different dyes, and karshinin, Rashi points out over here, is l'machol behema. But the English translation is vetch. It's soaking different things in order to make it for animal fodder. Unless, of course, there's enough time that the process is completed before the onset of Shabbos. So remember, the case over here is where you're beginning a process before Shabbos, but Beis Shammai seems to hold that the process may not continue into Shabbos, must be completed before the onset of Shabbos. Beis Hillel says it's mutter. Look at Rashi. Beis Hillel matirin, mishenasar esamayim ba'odyom. So according to Beis Hillel, as long as you began the process, as long as all of the pieces are in play prior to the onset of Shabbos, even if it continues into Shabbos, it's okay. Beis Shammai omrim, einosnin unin shel pishton lo socha tanur, el kadesh yafilu mi ba'odyom. Beis Shammai holds, you may not place unin shel pishton, Rashi points out, haragudos shel pishton, menufats, bundles of combed flax, and you go ahead, Rashi says, v'nosnin osa b'kadir le tanur or mislabi, and they apparently would put the flax into some type of receptacle, some type of pot, and then put the pot into the oven, because this way they would bleach the flax. So again, according to Beis Shammai, you can't do this on Erev Shabbos unless, of course, the bleaching process will be complete before the onset of Shabbos. Similarly, you may not put wool. Yora is a pot. Really, what it means over here is a dyer's vat. Only if the color is going to be absorbed into the wool prior to the onset of Shabbos. And in all of these cases, Beis Hillel Matirin, Rashi says, Matirin, Lasiso mi ba'od yom vihi koletes kol halayla. So the idea is, according to Beis Hillel, as long as you did your part prior to the onset of Shabbos, even if the actual process is going to continue into Shabbos, Beis Hillel is okay with that. Beis Shammai Omrin, Ein parsin mitzudos chaya va'ofos v'dogim. Similarly, Beis Shammai holds that you may not go ahead and spread out traps for animals, for birds, for fish, unless, of course, they're going to finish their trapping before the onset of Shabbos. Beis Hillel says it's mutter. Beis Shammai omrim, ein mochrin lenochri, you may not sell an object to a non-Jew. Ve'in toanin imo, you can't help a non-Jew load an animal with merchandise. Ve'in magbin alav, you may not load merchandise onto the back of a non-Jew. El kadesh yagir l'makom korov, unless of course the non-Jew, the guy is going to reach his close to his destination before the onset of Shabbos. Look at Rashi. El kadesh yagir l'makom korov, kilomar sheyehe amakom korov shulichenu shami ba'od yom. So according to Beis Shammai, you may not go ahead and either sell something to a non-Jew, load something onto a non-Jew's animal, or put a load onto a non-Jew's back, unless of course he's going to reach his intended destination with his merchandise prior to the onset of Shabbos. And Beis Hillel Matirin, but Beis Hillel permits it. Beis Shammai Omrim, Ein Nosnin Oros La'Abdon. You may not give over hides to be tanned. V'lo Kelim L'Koves Nochli, nor may you give utensils, clothing, to a non-Jewish launderer. El Chedei She'yasu Mi Ba'o Yom. Unless, of course, meaning it's talking about Erev Shabbos, obviously, unless, of course, there's enough time for the non-Jew to do what he has to do before the onset of Shabbos. Ubikulon, Beis Hillel Matirin. I'll say, obviously, we're going to see the point of the Gemara is going through. We're going to go through each of these cases to figure out what exactly is going on over here. So I'm not spending too much time on explanation. But, so Beis Shammai says that you may not go ahead and give over any of these items, hides to be tanned or clothing to be laundered, to a non-Jew who's going to do this avodah, unless, of course, there's enough time for him to do an Erev Shabbos. Ubekulon, in all of these cases, Beis Hillel Matirin. Beis Hillel permits it, Im HaShemesh, as long as what? Rashi points out top of Yud Ches, Im HaShemesh, Ba'od HaChama Zorachos. So according to Beis Hillel, as long as you give it over to the non-Jew before Shabbos started, we're okay. We're okay. Now, we'll see exactly how earlier in the day you actually have to give it over to the non-Jew. But the point that Beis Hillel seems to say, as long as you did your part before the onset of Shabbos, it's fine. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says the following. Hayu Beis Abba. No, again, Hayu Beis Abba. In our home, the minhag was Shahayu Nosnin Klei Lavan Lekoveis Nochri Shlosha Yamim Kodim LeShabbos. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, in our home, the minhag was that we would go ahead and give our white clothing, klei lavan. Rashi points out over here, klei lavan, shukasha lechabes. So apparently, these white garments were more difficult to launder. Vitzorich gimel yomim, Rashi says. And sometimes they would require 3 days to be laundered. Umachmirin al atzman kibei shanai. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that our minhag in our father's home was that specifically for white clothing, which needed 3 days to be laundered, we would only give it to a non-Jewish launderer 3 days prior to the onset of Shabbos. Right? So in order to ensure that what? That it would be completed before Shabbos. Rabbi will say, you have to appreciate the Chiddush in that. So what's the Chiddush then? Who's Rav Shimon Gamliel? Rav Shimon Gamliel is a direct descendant of Hillel. Right? So remember, it's Ben Achar Ben from Hillel. So Rav Shimon Gamliel is just saying, for the sake of full disclosure, now again, he's pointing out over here that this was a chumrah they accepted upon themselves. In the purest sense, they accepted the position of the Zayda, that these concepts apply, as long as you do your part before the onset of Shabbos, it's okay. But just as for Klei Lavan, which we knew was a protracted process, we dafka would give it to the non-Jewish launder 3 days before Shabbos. Okay. V'shavin elu v'elu. And everyone agrees. Shetanin koras beis habad v'igule hagat. So here is interesting. Both Beis Shem and Beis Hillel agree that you can go at tonin koras beis habad means that they would put the board, the korah is a better word than a board, a beam over the olives and a gulei hagat, and they had circular beams that they would put over the grapes. What does this mean? How would they crush olives and crush grapes to get the oil and to get the wine? They would put a heavy piece of wood and they'd put it on top of the olives. Put for some reason, whatever we'll discuss, for olives, it was a rectangular beam. For grapes, it was a circular piece of wood. But the idea was they put the fruits under these boards, and it would press down and extract the juice from it. So everyone agrees that you can go ahead and do this on Erev Shabbos, even though what? The process is going to continue into Shabbos itself. Take a quick look at Rashi over here. Shetonin is important, Rashi. So Rashi says, Shetonin, es hazesim bekoros beis habad. Everyone agrees that you can go ahead and put the beam, the pressing beam, onto the olives. Ve'es ha'anodim be'iguli hagat. And you can put this circular pressing beam on the grapes. Shelo hayu otzrin osa begalgal, kimo shalanu, elatonin osa bekoros kevedin. So Rashi just points out that apparently, I guess in the times of Rashi, they were already using some kind of wheel mechanism in order to go ahead and crush the grapes and olives. So Rashi says in times of the Gemara, they didn't do this. Rather, shalayu otzrin osa begalgal, shalanu, elatonin osa bekoros kevedin. Vahani digat, kari igulin, sheyudapin avin asuyin ki igulin. And apparently for grapes, they used to use very thick boards that were circular. V'shavin shetonin osu miva'odyom. And both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that you can do this before the onset of Shabbos, even though v'hamashka holech v'zov kol ha-Shabbos. Even though what? Even though halacha l'maisa, the process is going to continue the entire Shabbos. So I'll just point out over here that we can look at the rest of this. We'll see in the Gemara. But Rashi points out over here a very important yisod. The reason why even Beis Shammai allows for this is because the only circumstances under which Beis Shammai says you have to get the process done before Shabbos is when the malacha that will occur over Shabbos is an av malacha, is a real malacha. But if the only thing that's going to occur over Shabbos is going to be rabbinic in nature, even Beis Shammai will agree that if you begin the process before Shabbos, it could continue into Shabbos. So Rashi points out over here that, interestingly enough, we know you can't squeeze fruit. You can't squeeze grapes. And you can't squeeze olives on Shabbos for their juice. We'll discuss this extensively. That is the malacha of dash, the malacha of threshing. It's more specifically, it's titled under the label of mefarik. Right, but it's the same idea. Mefarik is the tolda for extracting juices from their pri, but it all falls under the amalach of dash, threshing. Because what was threshing? When you threshed the wheat, you tried to extract, right, it was partially to extract, part of borer also, to extract the kernel from the husk. So anytime you try to extract something from its greater entity, that's called dash, that's called mafarik, it's called borer. So So everyone agrees that the ikar malacha of dash is the initial squeezing of the fruit. That's the ab malacha, that's the doraisa. But when they use these boards were only used after the initial squeezing took place. Then what you would do is you would put the crushed grapes and the crushed olives underneath the board, and you would just let it sit. And over time, additional juices would flow through. That's not the ab malacha. That's not the doraisa. Doraisa only applies to the first time you're squeezing the item, and therefore it's a dirabanan. In cases of dirabanans, Rash, we're going to see this all in the year. I'm just giving you a sneak preview with this. But in Dinei Dirabanan, even Beis Shammai would agree that as long as you begin the process before Shabbos, it can continue into Shabbos itself. Says the Gemara, Man Tano Nesinas Mayim Lidiyo Zoi Shriyasan. So Bosai, what's interesting about what the Gemara picks up about the Mishnah is the following. That Halacha Lemaisa, the Mishnah says, the Machlokis Mishan Beisil, bless you, is regarding going ahead and soaking the ingredients together. So you're going to go ahead and make ink, or you're going to go ahead and make dyes, or you're going to make animal feed the vetch. So what's interesting in all of these cases is, the Mishnah just says that according to Beis Shammai, you're not permitted, or according to Beis Hillel also, you are permitted to soak everything together. But interestingly enough, it appears that the malacha is accomplished how? By putting everything together without the act of mixing it together. So the Gemara says, Man Tano, who is the opinion who holds that Nesinas Mayim Lidiyo Zohi Shriyasan, that the simple soaking of the items together is in and of itself the malacha. Look at Rashi. Man Tano Nesinas Mayim Lidiyo Va'afa Pi Shelo Gibel Hadiyo Zohi Shriyasan V'Havilisha. Let's go back for a second. What is the problem? Right? What we have to now take one step back. First, machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. You're going to go ahead, let's keep it easy. You're going to make dyes. How do you make dyes?
Something to color.
The answer, of course, is Google it, right? You'll figure out. Yeah. Right? So the way you make dyes, I guess from what you understand, is you put everything in, right? You take your herbs, whatever vegetation, it's obviously all plant-based, right, or whatever. So you take your ingredients, and you put it in water, and ultimately you let that sit. So what's interesting is the fact, so what's the malacha associated with making a dye? It's an issue of lisha. It's an issue of kneading. An issue of kneading, right? And the issue of kneading is when you take, let's say, in a simple level, you take liquids, and you go ahead and you combine them together, and they often form a thicker mass. So Rashi's point, and that's what happens, apparently, you mix all this stuff together, and it becomes a thicker mass. So Rashi points out, over here, what's interesting is, you're violating the malacha of Lisha, according to Beis Shammai, even though what? Even though you're not actually mixing the concoction, not mixing the mixture.
Or is it getting thicker?
I'm sorry, it is getting thicker.
Good.
That's it. As simple as that. So what's interesting over here, the Gemara is pointing out, is who is the opinion who holds that just simply adding the items together without mixing it is going to be a form of lisha? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yosef Rebihi. It's Rebbe Disanya, because Rebbe goes, Brisa says, Echad Nosin Es HaKemach, one puts in the flour, Ve'echad Nosin Es HaMayim, and one puts in the water. If two people do this, ha'acharon chayiv divrei Rebbe, the last one is chayiv, right? The one who introduces the water is chayiv for what? Now, what is he chayiv for? He's chayiv for lush. He's chayiv for kneading. Now, interestingly enough, he's chayiv for kneading, even though what? Even though he did not manipulate the mix, even though he didn't knead it, right? Even though he did not manipulate the mixture. According to Rebbe apparently holds that simply introducing the items together, even though you're not mixing it, once you've created the concoction, that halacha is violation of losh. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Eino chayiv ad shigbal. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you're not chayiv, you can't be chayiv for kneading until what? Or until when? Until you actually knead the concoction. Amar li Abaye, Abaye says, 1 second. So therefore, the Gemara is suggesting over here, Rabbi Yosef is suggesting that the author of our Mishnah is Rebbe, right? And therefore, Rebbe is of the opinion, and that's why there's Machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel over here, where you're introducing all of these items into the water, and according to Beis Shammai, unless it's going to be done before Shabbos, you can't allow it to continue on Shabbos, because that would be a violation of the Malach of Lash, of kneading. Even though what? You're not actively manipulating the ingredients. They're just going to sit there. The position of Rebbe is once you introduce the ingredients together, even if you don't actively need it, that's still the malach of lush. Rabbi Yosef, I'm sorry. So Amalei Abayis, Abayis, it's Rabbi Yosef, or maybe not. V'dilma, Adkan, the Dilma Adkan, lo kam Rabbi Yossi, ella bekemach de bar gibulhu. Maybe, so the Gemara is like this. Maybe Rabbi Yossi would only hold of this approach by kemach, by flour, de bar gibulhu. Ultimately, that it's something, and this David, all kidding aside, goes back to really what you were saying, is something that by definition becomes needed, right? That apparently, I guess according to this approach, if you were to introduce these mixtures together, they would ultimately coalesce by themselves. Aval dio delav bar gibolhu, eima lechayiv. So the Gemara says like this. So, I'm sorry, let's go back for just a moment. Rabbi Yossi was the one who disagreed with Rabbi. Right, and Rabbi Yossi was the one who said that halacha lemaisa, unless of course you actually need the flour with the water, you're not going to be chayiv. So Abaye says maybe Rabbi Yossi only holds in that case that you're not chayiv with kemach, right? Because why? Because it won't become mixed together unless, of course, what? You actively need it. Aval dio de lav bar gibulhu, when it comes, let's say, to the production of these inks. Right, and when we say ink, it applies to all three of the cases in the Mishnah. But with these items mentioned in the Mishnah, maybe the whole chap ultimately is what? That they come together by themselves. Meaning, what the Gemara is suggesting is the following, that our Mishnah must reflect the view of Rebbe, because Rebbe is the one who holds that you don't need to actively need items together in order to violate the malacha of Losh. All Abaye is saying is that maybe even Rebbe's disputant, Rabbi Yossi, would also agree in the case of the Mishnah. Because maybe Rabbi Yossi only agrees in the case of like flour and water, where if you just pour in the water and don't do anything, what's going to happen? Nothing. Right? But maybe Rabbi Yossi would agree in a case, let's say with dyes, where apparently the way the process works, is even if you do nothing together, the act of kneading, the desired result occurs. Even Rabbi Yossi would agree that just introducing the ingredients together is a violation of Lash. To which the Gemara says, "About yo d'lavar gibulhu emalachayiv." So the Gemara says, "Lo, sagreicha desanya echad nosin es ha'efer ve'echad nosin es ha'nayim ha'acheron chayiv divrei Rebbe." So the Gemara quotes another brayse. The brayse says that if one person introduces the efer, now we'll say efer is ash. Rashi points out over here d'lav bar gibulhu. Now, what does it mean, the lav bar gibulhu? Lav bar gibulhu means, so interestingly enough, it actually means over here that it doesn't have to be mixed with that. I mean, that lav bar gibulhu means what?
It's still going to have the desired effect without...
Right. It will mix without actively being manipulated. It will mix without being manipulated, right? So what happens? Rebbe holds that halacha lemaisa yichayv, which makes sense. That's the position of Rebbe. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda Omer, ad shiyigval. Rabbi Yossi really says, no, you're not chayiv for lash until when? Until you actively manipulate it. So Rabbi Yossi said, now, why is the Gemara bringing this braisa? Because here's a braisa that clearly seems to indicate that halacha lemaisa Rabbi Yossi holds. Right? Rabbi Yossi holds that you're only chayiv in all cases, unless, of course, what? Let me say differently. You're only chayiv if you actively manipulate the items. So the Gemara says, 1 second, the Dilma my efer offer. Maybe, what is efer? What is efer? Maybe when the braisa uses the word efer, Efer actually means offer, de bar gibulhu. And maybe the offer that's referred to over here is what? Is dirt. And dirt will only become mixed with the water of what? If it's actively manipulated. And that's the case. So meaning, it's not a stira. Maybe it's still the same thing that Rabbi Yossi only holds, that the only time you have to actually need the item is when the items won't come together without active kneading. But if the items will come together without active kneading, even Rabbi Yossi would agree with Rebbe. So the Gemara says, 1 second. The hatanya efer. You can't do that. Why, says the Gemara? Because there are two different prisos. One speaks about offer, and one speaks about efer. So the Gemara is trying to suggest over here that when the priso is speaking about efer, maybe it's really talking about offer, and therefore Rabbi Yossi would agree with Rebbe in a case of an item that doesn't need to be actively manipulated. To which the Gemara says, no, you can't start switching around the words. Why? Because there are two distinct prisos. To which the Gemara answers, well, 1 second. Midi gabi hadadi tanya, with the two braisos taught by the same Tana. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, yeah, we see, we often find this idea in Torah Shebaal Peh. understand that in the days before Torah Shabbat Peh, there is always a little bit, I don't want to call it a margin of error, but there's always a little bit of possibility of confusion, especially with things that are so similar. So the Gemara says, if the same author would have written the Braisa of Afar and Efer, then I would agree with you. There's no possibility of confusion. But once it's not the same Tana, then we can potentially posit that even though it said Afar, even though it said Efer, maybe it really means Afar. So Rabbi said, at the end of the day, the Gemara doesn't resolve it, but at the end of the day, the Gemara still, here's what we have. Our Mishnah reflects the view of Rebbe. That's what we know. What's the position of Rebbe? Rebbe holds that you could violate the Malacha of Lush even without what? Right? Even without actively needing the ingredients. Right? So that's what we know, and that's what's important for us now. The only variable is, could we even get Rabbi Yossi to sign on to our Mishnah? Because Rabbi Yossi is Rebbe's disputant in the Braisa that deals with flour and water. Rabbi Yossi says, you're not chayav for lush until you actively need it. But the Gemara wants to suggest that maybe it's only that case Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rebbe, because it's in that case where if you don't do anything with the two ingredients, they won't come together. But maybe Rabbi Yossi would agree that in a situation where the two ingredients will come together by themselves, then what? Then you don't need to actively need it in order to be chayav for the malacha of lush, which would then put Rabbi Yossi on the same page as Rebbe in our Mishnah. Okay, the Gemara floats the possibility, but at the end of the day, the Gemara is not sure. Fine, again, for our purposes, it doesn't matter. We've got Rebbe. Once you've got Rebbe, we go on. So the Gemara says like this. Tanur Rabbanan. Poskin Mayim Legina. Rabbi said, now you have to appreciate something. This is a very exciting sugya because we're gonna be on this for a little while, because this is the sugya of beginning Malach on Erev Shabbos and allowing it to go into Shabbos, which is a major, major discussion in Halacha. Sorry? Making Shalom. Baruch Shekivanta, we're gonna talk about Shalom today. Maybe. Kind of. In a roundabout way. Alright, possibly. Not at all, actually. It's not going to be today. It's going to be next week. No, you'll see why I say Shalom in just a moment. Tan Rabbanan. Toski Mayim Legina. So what you can do is, you can go ahead and you could look at Rashi for just a moment. Poskin Osin Nagar Katon Misvas HaMayim Legina. Bless you. You can go ahead and literally open up. It's saying, like, over here, you could go ahead and allow the water to flow. You could open. If we translate Rashi literally, Poskin Osin Nagar Katan Misvas HaMayim Legina, we can make a small opening from the spring into the garden. So you could go ahead and essentially open the hose. You could open the garden hose and allow the water to flow into your garden. Now, when are you doing this? You're doing this on Erev Shabbos. But the water is going to continue to flow when? Into Shabbos. Now, watering your garden on Shabbos is a malacha d'oraisa of zriya, of planting. Right, the melacha of planting is not just going ahead and dropping the seed in the ground. That's part of it. The melacha of zriya is anything that enables the act of planting or the act of growing produce. So you're going to go. So the Braisa says you could open up the water. You could open up the water on Erev Shabbos in Chashecha, umismalis malechas kol yom kulo, and the water will continue to fill the garden the entire day. Okay, that's case number one. Next, umanichin mugmar tachas hakelin Erev Shabbos, umisgarmin vahochin kol yom kulo. You can take mugmar. Rashi says mugmar levona umine b'samim nosten ala ish umaashnin habegadim sheirecha novis. What's very interesting? What they used to do with is they would go and when they would make new clothing, and apparently it seems to be they even did this on a regular basis to their clothing. They would burn incense like potpourri underneath their clothing to give their clothing a nice smell, a fragrant smell. So you can go ahead and begin this process on Erev Shabbos, and apparently this process took a while. So you could go ahead and light the incense on fire on Erev Shabbos and allow it to continue to burn throughout Shabbos and allow the clothing to become scented. Umanichin gafris tachas hakelim Erev Shabbos in chashecha, and you could burn sulfur underneath silver utensils. We could begin that process on Erev Shabbos. Umisgafrin vahochin kol haShabbos kula. And the sulfurization of the silver will continue throughout Shabbos. It's actually interesting. Well, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says Gafris Tachas Klei Kesef Shemetzarin Bohem Prochim Vitzuros Becheret Umaashin BeGafris VeHim Ashiros VeNikaros. It's actually very interesting. I don't know if this is how it's still done today, but you ever notice that when you have silver and the silver has a what do you call it when you make a design in it? Etching. Right? If you have an etching in it, so if you ever notice, the etching always has a darker hue to it, which is what makes the etching stand out. So Rashi points out, you know how they accomplished that? They would burn sulfur underneath the silver utensils, and apparently that would blacken the etchings in the silver, making the etching stand out. So you can begin this process on Erev Shabbos, and it continues into Shabbos. Next. Umanichin kilor agabi ayin. You can go in and put a kilor. Rashi says, kilor is tachboshes. Shekorin, kilorin is an eye salve. Well, so I'll just tell you an interesting, an eye salve, an eye ointment. Basically interesting. You know that the Tosus points out that the Mechaber, the author of our kinos, is a man, most of them is a man by the name of Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. So there's a big dispute as to who he was and to when he lived. So some say that Kalir was not his actual name. Kalir comes from the word kilorin, comes from this word eye salve. Because when did you put an ointment on your eye? When your eyes are very irritated, very. So what did Rabbi Elazar HaKalir do for us? He gave us the ointment for our red eyes. That we cry so much for the Churban, we cry so much for the Shachar of the Beis HaMikdash, and we need an outlet, we needed some way to be able to express our mourning. Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, by giving us the kinos, gave us the kilorin. Amazing idea. So maniach kilorin agabi ayin, so you can go ahead and you can put this eye salve, this eye ointment on your eye on Erev Shabbos, and it obviously will remain there throughout Shabbos. Now both say, I just want to point out over here, we're mixing and matching a couple of things. Some of the things that we're talking about are d'oraisos. Some of the things that we're talking about are d'rabbanans. We'll discuss on, like, for example, this eye salve one would seem to be what, malacha? Correct. Doesn't seem to be a malacha, right? Except what it is it's refuah. It's refuah on Shabbos. And refuah on Shabbos, engaging in medicinal healing on Shabbos, is certainly an issa d'rabbanan. So we'll dissect each of these cases. The common denominator, of course, over here is what? You're beginning a process that on Erev Shabbos that is technically prohibited on Shabbos, but it's going to continue into Shabbos. Okay, next. V'ispalanis al gabi hamaka Erev Shabbos im chashecha. And similarly, you can put it ispalanis. What's an ispalanis? Ritia. Rashi says a bandage. But of course, when it says bandage, it's not just a bandage. It means a bandage with some type of ointment on it as well. You could do this Erev Shabbos going into you could do it Erev Shabbos. Obviously, it's going to stay there all of Shabbos. Umisrapas v'olechas koyam kulo. And the healing will continue throughout the entire day. However, aval in nosin chitin l'soch harichayim shalmayim. So listen to this. Here's what you can't do. You can't go ahead and put wheat into the water mill. So we'll say, what could happen? So again, if you have wheat, you have a will that's will. A mill that's powered by water, right? If you have a mill that's powered by water, so technically speaking, you don't have to do anything. You could just undam the water source, and the water continues. Just leave the wheat there. It'll work all of Shabbos. The bride says, that you can't do. About inos and chid lozochar echayim shamayim, you can't go ahead and put the wheat into the grinding mill, the water grinding mill, ela b'chdei sheyitchinu miba'od yom. Unless, of course, the grinding of the wheat is going to be completed while it is still day. While it's still day. My time. So also again, we understand because the grinding of wheat, of course, is a malach of tochen, is a malach of grinding. But of course, this stands out because we just said all the other cases seem to point in the direction that as long as you begin the process prior to Shabbos, then what? It can continue throughout Shabbos. So Mar says, what's the problem over here? Listen to this. My time. Amar Rabba, mipnei shemashmas kol. You know why? Because it makes noise. Right? Because the water mill is noisy, and people are going to hear the grinding going on Shabbos. Take a quick look at Rashi. Rashi says the following. Rashi says, "Sheyitchenu miba'od yom." You see that, Rashi? Nipnei shemashma sakol, because it makes noise. And Rabbo said, listen to this. This is a very important phrase. Va'ofsha milsa b'Shabbos. Ofsha milsa b'Shabbos means that such a thing is not nice on Shabbos. The ika zelusa, and there is a degradation of Shabbos. So what's exciting about over here is there are so many concepts being thrown at us today that we're going to have to try to sift through as we go on in the coming days. But this concept of shamils is a very important yisod. What the Gemara is saying over here is there's a new category then of prohibitions, which are things that might not be prohibited because of malacha, meaning you might not be transgressing anything, but what? they don't look right on Shabbos. Now what that means, we'll have to discuss. But it could be either because they're making noise, and it sounds like work is being done on Shabbos, and having audible noise, having audible work happening on Shabbos is something that degrades the very identity of Shabbos. So just hold on to that. Amar Rav Yosef, the lema mamishum shvizas kelim. So Rav Yosef says, but one second. Isn't there a simpler reason to go ahead and say that the mill should be asur on Shabbos? After all, shvisas kelim. Now, what does shvisas kelim mean, Rabbosai? So we're familiar with the concept that on Shabbos we have to rest, right? And the Shabbos, our animals have to rest. So we want to say, well, Rabbi Yosef said there's another concept called shvisas kelim, which means that what? Even your utensils can't work on Shabbos. Not you, forget about your animals and you, but even your utensils can't work on Shabbos. This sanya, ubechol asher amarti aleichem tishmiru, right? The pasuk says in Shmos, and everything that I have told you, tishameru, right? You shall keep, you shall guard. The rabos shvisas kelim. This comes to include what? Halacha lemaisa, even your utensils may not do work. Elo amar Rav Yosef, mishum shvisas kelim. So Rav Yosef says, in reality, the reason, let's say, why the grinding mill is usher has nothing to do with the noise, has nothing to do with afsha milsa, nothing to do with zilusid the Shabbos. Rather, what? You can't have your utensils doing work on Shabbos. Well, the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, v'hashta da'amrit le'beisilo islu shvizas kelim da'oraisa, gafris umugmar my time asharu. So the Gemara says, well, one second. If you're going to tell me now that shvizas kelim is usher on Shabbos, that my utensils can't do malach on Shabbos, then we have to go back to this entire braisa, because then all of these cases should be prohibited, because in all of these cases my utensils are doing malacha. So why does Beis Hillel then allow for me to go ahead and sulfurize my silver or give them perfume my clothing, right? These would all be examples then of my kelim doing malacha on Shabbos also. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe it's different. Mishum delo ka'avid maisa. The difference over there is that in those cases, there's nothing active that's occurring. Meaning, what's happened when you sulfurize the silver? The silver's sitting there, the fire's burning, there's no dynamic activity that's happening. When you burn the incense and the clothing standard, there's no dynamic activity happening. Look at Rashi. Lo ka'avid, lo ka'avid ha'klishu ma'isa, ela munach ala aretz ve'hem besocho, aval rechaim of di ma'isa. So again, Beis Hillel can make the following chilek, that, when you have the mill is turning, the mill is actively doing things. But in all the other cases of the Braisa, the kelim really are stationary and not doing anything. The Gemara says, okay, well, if that's the case, unin shal pishtan, my time asharu. What about the case of the flax? Right? Well, remember, this is going back now to the Mishnah. What was the case of the flax? That you could take the flax, right, put it in the kedera, put it into the oven, and it becomes bleached. So why is that permitted? Again, mishum telo avid maisa. Same thing, Beis Hillel will say, because the only, when is there an issue with your kelim doing malacha? When there's literally movement of your kelim. And again, the grinding mill becomes the paradigmatic example of this. But in other cases where your kelim are essentially motionless, yes, they happen to be doing malacha, that's not a violation of shvisas kelim. So the Gemara says, one second. Umetzudas chayiv ofer dogim v'ka'avad maisa maitaima. So what about trapping animals? Right, remember again, one of the machlokes in Beisham and Beis Hillel in the Mishnah was where Beis Hillel said that you could put traps out on Erev Shabbos. And even though what? They may end up trapping animals on Shabbos. Beis Hillel still said it's okay. That's an situation where what? Where the kelim are going to be doing active malacha on Shabbos, and Beis Hillel still says it's motor, should be asur kashvizas kelim. To which the one says, no. Hasam nami belechi vikukri. Actually, lochei and kukri. So what's lochei and kukri? Lochei, Rashi says, is a chika, is a hook. So what kind of trap is it? Where the fish, let's actually put some bait on the end of the hook itself is stationary. And it's the fish that lodges itself on the hook. So the hook is not actually doing anything, the hook is just stationary, and therefore, bless you, and therefore there's no issue with shvisas kelim. Similarly, kukri is a basket. Rashi points out there was this type of trap where I guess the way it worked is the animal would make its way in. I guess you put food in the trap, and right, either it doesn't seem to close shut, because if it will close shut, then that's the kli doing something. Apparently the way it works is once the animal gets in there, the two sides become narrower, mamela, the the animal just can't get out. But the point is that the utensil itself is not doing any kind of malacha. You know, because when we first read this Mishnah, we have this idea of a trap, either, you know, this trap that you know, clings onto the animal, or the door shuts. The point of the Mishnah, according to Gemara, is making is, in both of these cases, the traps themselves are motionless. The traps themselves are dormant. It's the animal that gets itself stuck in the trap.
We're not finished.
So the Gemara says like this: the hashda, the amar of Oshia, amar of Asi, man tana shvisa as kimgas. So say, remember, the conversation until now is going with the assumption that Beis Hillel agrees to the notion of shvisa as kelim. Right? This is what we just did right now is the Gemara is making the assumption that everyone agrees that on Shabbos, not only can you not do malacha, not only can your animal not do malacha, but what? Your utensils can't do malacha. The Gemara says, hold it. Not everybody agrees with that concept. So the Gemara says, hashto, the hashto d'amar Rav Oshia. But now the Rav Oshia came along and said, amar Rav Asi, man tana shvisas kilim d'oraisa, beishamahi v'lo beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, one second, but we clarify this point. It's only Beis Shammai that holds a Shris HaSkelim, and not Beis Hillel. Rav Ossai, by the way, now, like Mamish, like a ray of sun, has just shone upon this Mishnah. Because now it all makes sense. What's the fundamental issue between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Whether or not your Kalim can do Malacha for you on Shabbos. Beis Shammai clearly says no. That's why in all of these cases, Beis Shammai says, you can start on Erev Shabbos, but what? But what? It's got to finish before Shabbos starts. Mm-hmm. And Beis Hillel says, no, you can't do malacha. Your animals can't do malacha. But who says your kelim can't do malacha? Now we'll discuss, obviously, the problem of course that's going to come up is, the Gemara quoted a pasuk that spoke about Shavisa's kelim, which would seem to say that Shisa's kelim is d'oraisa. So Beis Hillel's got a little bit of explaining to do as to how they could reject what would appear to be a biblical concept, which we'll get to. But before we get to the how, at least we've now gotten to the bottom of this, which of course allows us to breathe a lot easier because we're thinking to ourselves about all of the malacha that our kelim does over Shabbos, whether it's our candles, whether it's our crock pot, whether it's our lights, whether it's our air conditioning, whatever it might be, it's okay because l'maisa, at least we'll clarify this more, we accept the position of Beis Hillel that we don't buy into Shvisa's kelim. So the Gemara says the following: Velo beisel beshamai bein kaavid maisa bein lo kaavid maisa aser. So I will say now this all begins to make sense. According to Beshamai, who holds up Shvisas Kalim, it doesn't really matter if your kli is doing a maisa or your kli is not doing a maisa. At the end of the day, if your kli is engaged in an act of malacha, then what? Then what? It's aser on Shabbos. Lebeis Hillel afa gam de kaavid maisa shari. And according to Beis Hillel, even if your kli is actively dynamic, it's still mutter. Now again, don't get too excited because obviously we're going to qualify this concept. There are certain cases where even Beis Hillel would agree, but at least in principle, Beis Hillel would say your kelim need not come to rest on Shabbos. The hasha the amrit le Beis Shammai, afagav the lo avid maisa aser. Now according to Beis Shammai, that even if your kli is not doing anything, it's aser. Ihachi, if that's the case, mugmar v'gafris my time of sharu b'shamai. And also, here's what's interesting. In the brisa that we quoted earlier, of the Tanur Rabbanon, so right, all of the cases of perfuming the clothing and sulfurizing the silver, no one argued in that brisa. Right? Everyone seemed to agree with it. So now the Gemara is going to ask, so now the kasha is not on Beis Hillel, the kasha is on Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai, if you hold of Shvi Saskelim, if you hold that your utensils must come to rest, I mean, not do any malacha on Shabbos, even if what? Even if the kli is totally dormant, kli is not doing anything, why do you allow for the sulfurization of the silver and the perfuming of the garments? To which the Gemara says, Hosam, Rashi says, Mugmar v'gafis my time of Rashi says, Ha manchi bekelim. Rabbi said the assumption is where is the sulfur that's burning sitting, and where is the potpourri? Incense, right? Where is the incense sitting, right? In a kli, which means that what the kli is doing malacha, even though the kli is dormant. According to the Shana, should be aser. To which the Gemara says, no, not a kasha. Hasam manach aara. You know what the case? According to the way Beis Shammai understands that brisa is, where is the sulfur and incense sitting? Not in a kli, on the ground. And therefore, if that's the case, even your kli is not doing any kind of malacha. So you want to say, well, one second, what about the cases of gigis, ner, kedera, and shiput? Rabbi said, let's define these cases. So gigis, Rashi says, gigis is shashechar besochar, a brewer's barrel. right? Somebody's making beer. And how would you make beer? So apparently the way it has to sit, Rashi says, V'yefshar l'shokho l'aretz, v'asorin nishorin kol ha-shabbis yosem echas yamim, v'ashabbis bichlal. So interestingly enough, the way you'd make beer, I guess in Talmudic beer, is it had to sit for at least 8 days. So 8 days by definition necessitates a Shabbos, which means that according to the Shammah, you're going to have beer brewing over Shabbos, which is malacha of your kli. Rashi goes on, what's ner? And this is Mr. Martyr's point. Ner hadalak b'Shabbos. What about lighting a candle on Erev Shabbos? So when you light the candle on Erev Shabbos, what happens to Balsai? The fire burns into Shabbos. Now I want to point out, whenever the Gemara says ner, ner is never just, not never, but ner is often not just a candle, but ner also refers like to a lantern. To a source of light. So how can you go ahead and kindle the lantern on Erev Shabbos when the lantern is going to continue to burn into Shabbos itself? V'chein keder rash says, and similarly, if you have a pot of food, right? What does the Shammah do about the fact that you have a pot of food that you put on the fire before Shabbos? And Rashi points out, if you have a pot of food that's on top of the stovetop, by definition, the food will improve over the course of Shabbos. So what does Beis Shammai do with these three cases where the kelim are quote-unquote doing malacha on Shabbos? To which the Gemara says, interestingly enough, we know, Beis Shammai doesn't voice dissent in these three cases, right? Beis Shammai doesn't say that the brewer has to finish up before Shabbos, and he doesn't point out that there's a problem with lighting a candle, and he doesn't say you can't put food on the fire before Shabbos. Shiput, by the way, Rashi says that Shiput is the case of the Karban Pesach, right? That according to Beis Shammai, in a case of where Pesach fell out on Shabbos, you could lower the spit with the fire, it's the same case as the Kedera, but it's just by Pesach. You can lower the spit with the Karban Pesach into the fire prior to Shabbos, even though it's going to improve on Shabbos itself. So what does Beis Shammai do with all of these cases? To which the Gemara says, interesting answer. The Gemara says, the Mifkar Lohu Afkure. According to Beis Shammai, all of these cases only work if what? If you make the item Hefker. If you make the item Hefker. Rashi says, the Mifkar Lohu Lekelim V'shuv Einu Metzava Al Shvi Sasan. So according to the Shammah, the only way it works is if you make the kelim hefker. Now what does that mean? Because if you make the kelim hefker, then what's Rabbi saying? It's not yours. Even according to the Shammah, you're only mitzvah, you only commanded on what? On your own kelim. But if it's somebody else, so okay, which sounds strange, the Gemara seems to be saying that therefore, according to the Shammah, in order to go ahead, I guess, and heat up your soup on Erev Shabbos and eat it hot on Shabbos, it's going to improve, you'd have to be mafkir the soup, you have to be mafkir the beer barrel. Okay, we'll come back to that. So the Gemara says, man tana lahada tana rabbanon. So who is the opinion of the following statement? Lo timale isha kedera asosios v'turmesin. A woman may not fill up a pot of asosios v'turmesin. Also, we had this in Brachos. Rashi's asosios v'turmesin, mine kidnios. These are different types of lentils. Utzrichin bishul yoser. And they need an incredible amount of cooking. Right? They need to be cooked a long time in order to become edible. Oh, we'll see. No, hopefully it's not your chalent. Because right? If this is your chalent, it's not going to be ready for lunch. So we'll discuss what this is going to be in just a moment. But the point over here is it needs a lot of cooking. So what happens? So lo simale isha kedera asasios intermesin. A woman may not fill up a pot filled with asasios intermesin. V'saniach l'sol chatanur erev Shabbos im chashecha. And put it into the oven on erev right before Shabbos. Right? Now, so the Braisa says she can't do this. She can't do this, okay? V'im nasnan, and if she did it, l'motzai Shabbos asrun dechtei shiyasu. On motzai Shabbos asrun, they need so much cooking that the pashas is not going to be ready for Shabbos. So on motzai Shabbos, when she wants to eat it, she has to wait dechtei shiyasu. Now, Rabbi says an interesting yisod. Right now, another account we're being introduced to. Whenever you do something that is prohibited on Shabbos, right? So not only can you not benefit from it on Shabbos, but you can only benefit from it after Shabbos, if you wait the amount of time that it would have taken to do the malacha after Shabbos. Or in other words, it's a penalty. Lest you think that even, okay, so I'll do a malacha on Shabbos, and even though I can't benefit from it on Shabbos, at least I'll get it right after Shabbos. Chazal said, no. If you do a malacha that you can't do on Shabbos, not only could you not use it on Shabbos, but we penalize you in that you can't use it after Shabbos until you wait the amount of time that it would have taken you to do it after Shabbos, which essentially does what? Which says what? Removes any benefit from doing the malacha itself on Shabbos. You're not saving yourself anything because you have to wait. Well, we'll talk about that more in depth. Now, that case is not as much a concern for us. Lo yimale nachtum chavish shalmayim, v'yaniach l'soch atano erev Shabbos im chashecha. Similarly, a baker may not fill up a barrel of water and put it into the oven on right before Erev Shabbos. Now, why would the baker be doing this? Rashi points out the baker would only be doing this in order to go ahead and have hot water for kneading after Shabbos. He's not kneading on Shabbos, but he wants the water after Shabbos. V'im osakein, and if he did it, l'motzai Shabbos asrun b'chdei sheyasu. Right, you have to wait until motzai Shabbos, until the amount of time that it would have taken him to do it on Shabbos. Meaning, we don't want people starting processes on Erev Shabbos for motzai Shabbos, and if you did it, you have to wait on motzai Shabbos b'chdei sheyasu. So the Gemara says, Lema Beishamai Hivalo Beisilo. This would seem to say that this Braisa reflects the view of Beishamai and Beisilo. Because Beishamai would seem to be the one who would have the problem with this practice, because what are you doing? You are having your malach, you are having your kelim do malacha for you over the course of Shabbos. Only Beishamai has a problem with that. Beisilo does not. To which the Gemara says, no. Afilu Tema Beisilo. Even Beishilo would agree with this ruling in this Braisa, even though Beisilo, who normally holds, there's no issue of Shvisas Kelim. Your Kelim can do Malacha for you on Shabbos. Even they still would agree these cases are Aser. Why? Gezeira Shamiyachata Begecholim. Oh, that what's Beis Hillel's? What would be Beis Hillel's concern? That you may come to stoke the coals. Now, why would you come to stoke the coals? Rashi says, Yechata Begecholim Lemaher Bishulon. Right? To go ahead and hasten the cooking process. So now, Abba said, there's a new Yisod over here. That even Beis Hillel, who holds that halacha l'maisa, we're not concerned with shvi'is askelim, will prohibit certain cases because there may be a yetzer hara to go ahead and stoke the coals, which would intensify the heat, which would hasten the cooking process. His chab over here is because these are things that take a long time and you need it dafka after Shabbos, you may come to hasten the cooking process. Ihochi, well, one second. So now you're introducing a new understanding. Now you're telling me that Beisilo has this fear that one may come to stoke the coals in order to hasten the cooking process. If that's the case, Ihochi. Now, I shouldn't say cooking process. Let me take that back. That one would stoke the coals in order to go ahead and amplify the heat. Obviously, you'd be amplifying the heat to hasten the cooking process, but you'll see what I'm saying in just a moment. If that's the case, mugmar the gafris nami ligzar. If that's the case, then why does Beis Hillel allow for the perfuming of the clothing over Shabbos, or for that matter, the sulfurization of the silver? Meaning, if that's the case, why, if you're going to be concerned with somebody stoking the coals in order to intensify the heat source, so why wouldn't we be concerned in these cases also of perfuming the clothing and sulfurizing the silver? That one will go ahead and stoke the coals to amplify the heat source. To which the Gemara says, no. Hasam lo machti luhu. In those cases, a person is not going to stoke the coals. You know why? Di machti salik buhu kutra vikashi luhu. You know why? Because in those cases, Rav Osai, if you go ahead and you stoke the coals, there's another byproduct of stoking the coals, which is what? Smoke. Smoke. And the truth is, smoke is detrimental to these processes. A person doesn't want smoke when they're sulfurizing the silver, and a person doesn't want smoke when perfuming the clothing. So because there would be an actual net detriment to stoking the coals, Beis Hillel is not concerned there. What about unin shel pishtan? What about the bundles of flax? Remember that you put into a kederah, you put into a pot, and then put into the oven to bleach it. Nami ligzar, why aren't we concerned over there that a person may come to stoke the coals? Hasam, kevan dekashi lehuzeka, lo migla le. There's a different reason over there. Because, remember, the unin shel pishtan, the bundles of flax are in an oven. The assumption is that the oven is sealed. The oven is sealed. A person is not going to uncover the oven. Why? Or open the oven, or uncover the kedera. Why? Because interestingly enough, the zeka, the wind, is actually detrimental to the process. So therefore, even though a person might have the yetzar to go ahead and stoke the coals to amplify the heat source, the net detriment that will occur as a result of uncovering the unin shel pishtan, the flax, will prevent a person from doing so. Similarly, Yora, so why aren't we concerned in a case of where a person put the wool in a dyer's vat? Why aren't we concerned that halacha l'maisa, a person may come to stoke the coals over Shabbos to amplify the fire, hasten the process? To which the Gemara says, Ligzar Amar Shmuel Beyora Akura. Oh, what are we talking about? We're talking about a Yora Akura, which is Akur Me'alayish. We're talking about a vat that's no longer on the fire. That's the case, according to Yisrael, the vat's not on the fire. If that's not on the fire, there's no Shemichata Venechosh Shema Magisbo. Oh, so why shouldn't we be concerned that a person will come to go ahead and stir the pot, right? And stir. Now again, this could be the stirring of the wool in the vat. Now, interestingly enough, remember, we'll discuss this concept. Hagasa stirring is part of the process of bishul, is part of the process of cooking. So why aren't we concerned that someone's going to stir it? Ba'akura v'tucha. Because the case of the wool is where it's in a pot. That's what? That's not only not on the fire, but what? But that's also sealed. That's sealed. So a person's not going to come to open it. V'hashta the amr mar. So I will say now we come full circle. V'hashta the amr mar. Gezeirah shem yechata begichalin. Now that we said, now I will say, I want to point out to you, this sugi is very important for us. Because the sugi of shem yechata begichalin, that you may come to tamper with the heat source and stoke the flame, is the entire reason why we use a blech on Shabbos. Right? This is the blech sugya. That there's a concern. Now remember, we've been speaking all about non-cooking cases. But the reason why this is most halachic l'maaseh for us is because now that we have this fear that a person may come to tamper with the heat source on Shabbos, the question is, how do we allow for food to remain on a fire erev Shabbos going into Shabbos? So that's not our sugya. We're going to get to that sugya. But the Gemara jumps ahead a little bit. The Gemara says the following. Now that we said that there is a concern with leaving, let's say, food on a fire on erev Shabbos going into Shabbos because you may come to adjust the heat source, the Gemara says, Hai kedera chaisa. If you have a pot of raw food, Shari la'anucha erev Shabbos im chashecha betanura. You are permitted to go ahead and put it in the oven or put it on the fire erev Shabbos. Right? Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos. My time, what's the reason? Kevan de lo chazi lo urta, since there's no way it will be ready at night, asuchi mesach daita mine, a person will remove their mind from it, velo asi lechatuye gicholim. And a person will not come to stoke the coals. I will say this is incredibly yisod for us. Because we'll get into the yisod that in general, in order for food to be on a fire erev Shabbos, right, in order for you to leave food on, let's say, the blech on erev Shabbos, the food must have reached a threshold of edibility. We'll talk about Machol Ben Jerusai, one third coal, we'll discuss what that is. But interestingly enough, let's say you have a situation where a person is running, whatever happened, but a person is running late, erev Shabbos, and they realize they didn't put up the food on time. What the Gemara is saying over here is it's better to put up food raw on erev Shabbos than it is to go ahead and put food up partially cooked. Because if it's raw, there's one thing for sure, which is what? You're not eating it tonight. You're not eating it tonight, which means you're eating it tomorrow. If you're eating it tomorrow, it means it has the full night to cook. There's no fear of shemichat. There's no fear you may come to stoke the coals. But if, let's say, the food is partially cooked, where there's a possibility that if what? That if you intensify the heat source enough, you could be ready for tonight. That's when we get into issues on Shabbos. So this is called the famous heter of Kedera Chaisa. Now, again, we'll discuss, there's an incredible machlokes aposkim as to whether or not this concept still applies today with our various cooking apparatuses that actually allow for faster cooking. Where technically speaking, you could put something up running. So we'll discuss it. But the point that Gemara is saying over here is, it's clear that at least from the Talmudic perspective, that if there is this fear of putting food on a fire, open a fire because you may come to adjust the heat source, if the food is totally raw, that concern does not apply. So the Gemara says the following. Ubashil shapir dami. So Gemara says similarly, if you have food that's fully cooked, there's also no fear that you may come to tamper with the heat source for the simple reason that what? You don't need to. It's already cooked. So the Gemara says, bashil velo bashil. This is interesting. So what happens if a food is partially cooked? Oh, that's when there's a problem. Osir. That's the Gemara is when there's a real issue. Take a look at Rashi. Bashil. No, there's no Rashi here. Just bashil shapir dami. So the Gemara says, if the food is partially cooked, then you may not go ahead and put it on the fire on Erev Shabbos. Probably you have to qualify this ruling. Why? Because in that case, that's mamish where there's an issue of shemichata, right? That's an issue of where you may come to tamper with the heat source in order to what? In order to go ahead and hasten the cooking process. However, the Gemara says, V'ishada be'gar machaya shapir dami. Oh, but you know how to rectify the case of partially cooked food? What should you do? Throw in a raw piece of meat. Because I will say, if you throw in a raw piece of meat, then what? What does that do? That makes the entire concoction, the entire pot, like kedera chaisa. So one piece of raw food gives the entire pot an identity of raw food, and therefore, once you're raw food, we go back to kedera chaisa. There's no concern with tampering with the heat source because it's not going to be ready anyway by that night. It's going to cook all night, and therefore, there's no concern that you may come to adjust the heat source. V'hashta da'amar mar. So I will say, now the Gemara goes back for just a moment, and now that we've just said before Kol midi, the kashe lezeka, lo miglule. If that's the case, now that you've told me that any time that you have a food cooking in a closed area, that if you were to open it and wind, air comes in, it could adversely affect the process, and therefore, again, you will not come to open it. So what the Gemara said until now is that Allah says anything that's cooking, or that's, we'll call it cooking, in a way, that if you were to open it, the wind could adversely affect the process. The Gemara says, in those cases, we're not concerned that someone's going to open the receptacle and stoke the coals, because the adverse effect would be too great. Hai bisra degadja, the sharik, shapir dami. If that's the case, then if you're making meat of a gedi, right? Gadya is a kid. Rashi says, kashi lezeka. So apparently, again, in order for kid meat to be fully cooked, lamb meat to be fully cooked, so the idea is you don't want any air, you want it to be cooked in a sealed receptacle, you don't want any air coming in. So the Gemara says, good, hai bisra de gadja, visorik shapir dami. So if you're cooking lamb, right, kid meat, and the air, and let's say the pot is sealed or the oven is sealed, it's okay to do it into Shabbos. The barcha velo sarik. However, if you have barcha meat, Rashi says barcha meat is ayul gadol, a large ram. So apparently Rashi says lo kashi lezeka va'asi legluye piatan or lito kisuyev lachtos. So apparently, if you're cooking ram meat, where again the little bit of air that comes in is not going to adversely affect the process, then what? Aser. Then I will say, in that case, halacha l'maisa, it will be aser to cook it going into Shabbos. Why? Because then there's a real fear that what may you do? You may come to open up the oven and go ahead and stoke the coals. However, the Gemara says, what about the gadja velo sarik? What happens if you have kid meat, velo sarik, but the oven is not sealed? Or the barcha v'sarik, or you have ram meat, but the oven is sealed. So in both of those cases, you have a factor going one direction, a factor going the other direction. So in the kid case, you know, the meat, we know the quality of the product will be better if you don't open it up, but on the other hand, the oven is not sealed. On the other hand, you have the ram meat, where again, opening it up is not going to adversely affect the meat, but what? But the oven is sealed. So what do you do in those cases? Rav Ashi shay, Rav Yirmiyahu b'Difti aser. Rav Ashi says mutter. Rav Yirmiyahu b'Difti says it's aser. Or Rav Ashi, the sharon, according to Rav Ashi, who says that it's mutter, ein solin basar batzal ubeitza ela kidei she'atulumi ba'od yom. What does Rav Ashi do with the brisa that says that you may not roast meat, onions, or eggs, unless, of course, it's going to be fully finished before Shabbos starts? To which Rav Ashi would say that, oh, that's a case, hasam debar chavalo sharik. You know what that's a case of? That's a case of ram meat in an oven that's not sealed. Okay? So also everybody would agree that a case of ram meat in an oven that's not sealed is a recipe for halachic disaster. Why? Because there's nothing's going to happen to the ram meat if you open the oven, and the oven itself is not sealed, which means you'll probably come to stoke the coals and hasten the cooking process. Ike de Amri, others have a different version of this exchange, and they say, the gadja, when it comes to kid meat, bein sarik, bein lo sarik, shapir dami. When it comes to kid meat, it doesn't matter if the oven's sealed. Even if the oven's not sealed, we're not fearful that you're going to come to stoke the coals. Why? Because no one's going to want to ruin the lamb meat by opening up the oven in order to stoke the coals. And therefore, even if the oven's not sealed, it's mutter. The barcha, when it comes to ram meat, the barcha nami, shapir dami. The barcha nami, the sarik, shapir dami. But, and if you have ram meat, as if the oven is sealed, everyone also agrees that what? It's mutter. Because since the oven is sealed, one is not going to go ahead and break the seal in order to stoke the coals. Kipli, when do they argue? The barcha velo sarik. In a case of ram meat, right, where the oven is not sealed. Rav Ashi says it's mutter. Rav Yirmiyahu midifti aser. Rav Yirmiyahu midifti says it's aser. Or Rav Ashi, according to Rav Ashi, says that it's mutter. V'hatanya ein solin basar batzal ubeitza. What do you do about the price that says that you may not roast meat or onions or eggs? Unless, of course, it's done during the day. Hasam bebisra agmure. Ah, what's the case over there? You know what that price is? Rashi says basagmure. Basagmure, Rashi says, is she'eno betanur. That's talking about meat roasting over an open fire. Spitted meat? Is that a... Doesn't sound right. That's right. It's not going to be spat meat, right? Meat on a spit, right? Meat on a spit roasting over an open fire. Because we'll say then what? Once it's over an open fire, that certainly is going to be halachically problematic. Why? Because then again, the coals are right there and are easily stokable. Amravina, hai krachaya, Ravina said, this krachaya, now krach, remember, we translate in a number of different ways. So some translate it as squash. More often than not, it's translated as gourd. As gourd, right, it's all the same family. So this raw gourd, shapir dummy. Now, what does that mean, shapir dummy? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, no, I'm sorry, second time I did that. Ha krachaya shapir dummy, kevan de kashil izika, kebisra de gaji dummy. So Ravina says that you could go ahead and put a cooked gourd, right, or a gourd to cook, or a squash to cook, over the coals, Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos, and there's no concern that you will come to go ahead and stoke it. Why? Kibisra de gajidami. Because it's just like meat of the kid, meaning the same way that we're not concerned that a person is going to come to open the oven to stoke the coals because the wind will ruin the meat, so too the wind will go ahead and ruin the gourd, the squash. So we'll stop over here, but let's just clarify the concepts we have, because we did a lot today, Baruch Hashem. So number one is the fundamental machlokis Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, which Shlis Askelim. Right? Beis Shammai holds that not only must you rest, must your animals rest, but what? Your kelim must also rest as well. It turns out that Beis Shammai supports that idea, Beis Hillel rejects that idea. But interestingly enough, the one case where Beis Hillel might agree with Beis Shammai is the case of the mill. But not because the mill is doing malacha, but why? Because of the noise. That apparently Beis Hillel does support this idea of what we call of shamilsa zelusa deshabsa, of certain activities that themselves may not be usher, but chip away from the sanctity of Shabbos. Usually it's because of the noise associated with them, that it comes under the umbrella of ovdin dechol, of weekday-like activities. So even Beis Hillel, who would say your kelim don't have to rest, would say, if your kelim are making noise, you can't use it on Shabbos. So we pass in halacha lemaisa in the realm of Shvi'as Kelim, like Beis Hillel, that there is no concept of Shvi'as Kelim, we reject the position of Beis Shammai. Next concept we brought up is the concept of Shami Echata, which is a new idea that we've been introduced to today, namely the idea that when using an open heat source on Shabbos, there is a concern under certain circumstances that one may come to go ahead and stoke the coals. What came out from this Gemara, although this doesn't help us very much contemporarily, is apparently according to the Gemara that if you have either a food that will be adversely affected by the wind that will come in when you open the oven, or the oven itself is sealed as some type of hekker, as some type of reminder, then halacha lemaisa one would not have to go ahead and worry about that one may come to go ahead and stoke the coals. But the major hefter the Gemara handed down today was the notion of kedera chaisa. That in all circumstances it would appear that halacha lemaisa, if there's no why would someone come to stoke the coals? Why would someone come to stoke the heat source? Why hasten the cooking process? Tonight, right? The idea is you need it, because there's no chashash of hastening the cooking process for tomorrow, because you've got a whole night to cook. You have time. The hastening the cooking process comes when you want something for the night of Shabbos. So that's what the Gemara says, is if it's clear that no matter what you do, you're not going to have it for tonight, then what? There's no fear of Shami Echata. Therefore, Kedera Chaisa would appear to be a heter, would appear to go ahead and remove the concern that you may come to manipulate the heat source. And the Chiddush of the Gemara is, it's very easy to turn your pot of food into a Kedera Chaisa. How do you do it? Throw in even one piece of raw meat. One piece of raw meat goes ahead and makes something into Kedera Chaisa. We're not finished with this, but I will tell you that the concept of whether or not Kedera Chaisa, this concept, this heter of raw pan of food applies today, was the machlokis of Moshe and Rav Henkin, right? Zichronim Luracha. A major, major machlokis whether or not this heter applies today. We'll get into the Mirza Shemor in the coming days. Shkoyach.